Sam.
Hello.
Hi, we are doing this series of explorations about different ideas, about different topics. And you've asked me to talk a bit about what I had to explore about sex and sexuality. Just before now, we recorded an introduction, which basically says that when I started to look into it, I looked into four aspects of it. The first one was sex, what's the problem? The second one, sex, what is the solution? The third one is sex, so how do we live it? And the fourth one is sex, what is it all about? So what sex is all about is a change of consciousness, that you can go from individual consciousness to transcendental or collective consciousness, let's say God awareness, as you would call it elsewhere. So that will be the fourth part of the story. And the third part of the story is how do you get there? How do you go from this individual awareness to shared awareness? And that's essentially what we learn in puberty. So in puberty, we learn that we have limitations, but we also learn to respect others in how they complement us and thus make us more complete. And sex is part of that story. Specifically, orgasm is that part of that story. So that all comes together in the third part of the story. And the second part of the story, which goes before that, is what is sex actually? How does it come to be? What is the purpose of it? How can you discover it, see it in nature? What are the varieties of it? And what seems to be the common purpose of it? And the common purpose of sex in all forms seems to be that life continues on Earth, and that life can develop in whatever circumstances there are, and learn how to overcome circumstances, to transcend conditioning, to actually go free of constraints which we might find, specifically by this sexual interaction where we combine the knowledge of the one with the knowledge of the other, which most animals do by the exchange of genetic material. So at that level we see that via the food chain all of the genetic material of Earth is all interconnected, interrelated. It is used between all life forms, so we all learn from each other, as has been said by Marciniak, Barbara Marciniak. Earth is a learning living library. So then part one of the story where we are now is, what is the problem then? Why is there a problem? If sex is a solution, why is there a problem? So at that sense, I was able to only come up with a very simplistic and a drastic kind of understanding that the only problem that we have with sex is that there is a social conditioning in which people tell other people what sex is not, that there is a denial of sexuality and a denial of the discovery of sexuality. It is a denial of the respect of sexuality, and as a result it is a denial of the proper experience of sexuality. But that has nothing to do with the individual. It has to do with the relationship between individuals, in groups, in society, in humanity. So it is not a problem which operates at the level of the individual, but it is much more a problem in the way individuals form relationships, form groups, and form humanity. That I would rather describe as a topic in itself, how individuals form relationships, form groups, and form humanity, because once you understand that, you can also understand that a group is merely a relationship of relationships. So if the relationship doesn't work, then the relationship of relationships will doubly not work. And once you see that humanity is a group of groups, then you can understand that as a group is a relationship of relationships, then a group of groups is a relationship of relationships of relationships of relationships. So then things can really get confused. So that I would rather do as a story in itself, because then at that level you can also understand what went wrong and how in the creation of groups there is a loss of consciousness, which has to do with the individual having freedom of choice, but in a relationship you only have half of the freedom of choice. You have 50% which you can contribute in the relationship, the other has 50% what they can contribute into the relationship. Out of that 50-50 balance, you can then decide that you want to listen to the other more, if you want to tell more to the other. There's a consensus that you could momentarily shift the channel of the communication more the one way or more the other way. But in some cases, you can see that people abuse that flexibility of transfer of, let's say, authority into the relationship, and that one usurps the control over the relationship at the expense of the other. A lot of that has to do with territorial battles of very much animalistic kind of animal behavior kind of behavior. And that leads to problems such as the narcissistic kind, the psychopathological kind, where there is a disbalance between individuals. And of course, if you have that between individuals, you can also have that in groups. In my approach, I try to reduce it to the more simple approach, which is that we all grow up from baby to child to adolescent to adult. And as a baby, we're totally dependent for food, information, care, shelter, everything on the people who are the caregivers. Usually that is the parents, could be anybody. Then as a child, you learn to stand on your own legs. You've learned to fall and get up again. So you can walk around, but within a limited radius. So as a child, you are exploring your relationship to your environment. And as a result, you discover that there are things you can do and cannot do, and others will still need to care for you and protect you and make sure that you are safe in the environment that you're in, that you don't wreck your own life, and that others or other things will not rob your life or your health. So in a child level, there is this kind of growing out of your cocoon, but not ready to fly as yet. At the third level of development in puberty, that is with the onset of the hormonal sexuality, the development of sexual traits, the shift from being a child to being a man or a woman, and say a distinction first is the other sex, which should also lead to the learning of the complementarity of the sexes. We'll come back to that later. For now, in puberty, there is also this transition or transcendence of limitation in a more general sense, that you discover that you're limited, but also that you're able to care more for your own conditions and conditioning and conditionality, that you can actually discover what your limitations are, and you can discover that other people do not have these limitations, so that you can complement each other. But therein you need to respect the uniqueness and the difference of others. Others are no longer like you. It's not just that you are boys and girls altogether being children, but you are now learning to be men and women in humanity. The differences do matter, but how do they matter, and how do you work with that? And then out of that learning normally would come the phase of adulthood, in which you learn to become an individual, responsible for yourself, autonomous in how you can care for yourself, because that's what you would learn in puberty, and then sovereign in how you live together with others, because that is what you do as an adult. In this development from baby to child to adolescent to adult, normally would be a transition from dependent to self-standing, to autonomous, to sovereign. And in our society, we see that in a lot of circumstances, the parents do not help the children to become sovereign. If you look in Europe, Switzerland is the only country where by law every individual living in the country is considered to be a sovereign. So they make their own law. There's nobody else that makes the law for them. They can only determine their own law. What the Swiss do not have as yet, and what is lacking also in the other countries in the Western world, is that people learn to become autonomous. They do not learn to become autonomous because they do not learn to live up to their own values. People are kept in a perpetual state of puberty by the system of banking. But the system of banking, as I have explained separately elsewhere, is a superstition in which it seems as if the values that you live by can be created, treasured and maintained, and calibrated by others. So that would then be called the banking system, but the banking system merely hands out scrap metal and scrap paper and says that these are bits of value, and if you play by their rules, then through that you can interact with others. What is lacking in that system is that people understand that they can make their own money, they can create their own values, and they can live by that. So, for example, if the Swiss learned how to own their own bank, they would really be a lot further in their development than where they're stuck now, being dependent on bank money. I need to introduce all of these concepts because I basically want to come down to a more basic system, which is not that the government and the making of the laws are connected, or that the banks and the making of values are connected, but what I want to address is how religions and the making of relationships are connected. What I want to point out is that the problems which we have in the understanding, the appreciation, the practice and the experience of sexuality are basically because there is a religious suppression of sexuality which has been going on for a very, very long time already. If you look back in history, then you can see that this has not always been the case. For example, at the moment that they were unearthing Pompeii, which had been dusted over by the ashes of the local volcano, then once they unearthed the buildings, and they discovered that there were a lot of pornographic images on the walls. People with people, opposite sex, same sex, animals being involved, attributes being involved. It was evident that in Pompeii sexuality was explored and discovered in many ways, and evidently all of them were allowed and allowable, and painted on the walls of the houses. The problem was that they discovered these things when the Victorian era mindset was still prevalent in the Western culture, so that led to a situation in which those paintings were locked up in Pompeii, and that only the rich could look at it, and the other people were not supposed to look at it, because there was this morality which basically said that people should not be distracted by sex in having their life. If you look at it more closely, in the Victorian era you had the landowners and you had the workers, so as the rich or the landowners were allowed to look at it, the lock and key were merely meant to keep the workers and the not landowners away from this understanding of sexuality. So it also implied that the rich were free to experience sex and look at sex and do sex in whichever way they liked. And of course there is a whole series of texts in the Victorian underground which are all about pornography of different kinds. So that exploration of sexuality in all the diverse ways, and also in many perverse ways, was something which was done in the Victorian era, but basically allowed for the rich only, because the other way around, the withholding of sex was part of what was advocated for the life of the workers, so that they, let's say, would not waste their life on sex and would not have the experience of pleasure of sex, but that they would simply go on with the work and have a crippled and limited interpretation and experience of sex, as a result of which they would not be distracted from what other people thought that they needed to do, which was to work. So that's where I then changed the focus of what I was looking at and realized that the morality of sexuality has been preached for many years already, or was preached for many years already, by the church, or by the churches. Originally it was one church. According to Jordan Maxwell, it was created by six banking families in Rome, who basically orchestrated or manipulated the money in the society of Rome, and as a result, by their money they would control and regulate the trade, by their money they would control, regulate the warfare, by warfare other lands would be annexed, say stolen, the people in the other countries would be taxed, say robbed, and so that the political system and the financial system were actually one and the same. And as you might know, at that time the society was a slave society, so you had a limited amount of free people and a large amount of slaves, and the slaves were not free to determine what they did with their life. They would have somebody else determine it for them. And where in the Roman society, the Roman culture thought that they need to determine the life of the other cultures around them, so they would go out and do the land grab in the different countries, tell people how to live, and so we're going to bring you the Roman law, so everybody will be very happy. But most of that was about the law of ownership, property, propriety, and tax payment, which meant that those other peoples, though they were called free as members of the Roman slave system, financially they were not free, because they were paying tribute, which essentially financed the whole system of Rome. And again, apparently six banking families decided that they needed to make a change from let's say brutal and oppressive land grabbing culture, which was also, by the way, very vengeful and revenge taking on anybody who opposed Rome. They would just be eliminated and destroyed in a very rigorous manner. For example, Carthago is an example of that. Carthago was relevant for the Roman Empire because they controlled a lot of the sea trade. The Romans didn't want that, so they destroyed them. And it is that philosophy of taking control, which was then transformed from the Roman legions and the Roman state politics into the Roman church, with a hierarchy same as that of the legions. But now it was not a political code by power of war, as it had been done by Caesar, but instead it was rebranded as a political power of a god. And that of course was the main export product which the Romans had taken from Egypt, where they had learned from the Greeks, the Ptolemaean pharaohs, that if you are the leader of a group, then that makes you very vulnerable, because every mistake that you make will be attributed directly to you. But if you can pretend that there is a leader which is telling you what to do, then you can create a scapegoat called God, who then is the bully who tells you what to do when it displeases others, but also who is untouchable so that when things go wrong, you merely need to say, yes, God willed it, and there must be a reason for it. So it is that kind of psychological technology of mental warfare which was introduced from Egypt to Rome and became the basis of the church. And then once you understand that the church was the continuation of the Roman Empire, then you can also understand that it was still about the control of the population. And in that sense, the Roman Church and all churches are a moralizing of infallibility of authority of government. So you will normally see that church and state go hand in hand, even if they're separated. That was mainly one of the learnings in the Renaissance, that if the church is the state, you have the same kind of problems as when the state is a church. So in the Roman times, it was the state, and basically any system of belief would work. It was allowed, was tolerated, was used, and through those different religions, people were given beliefs of how to live, what to do, and how to resolve problems, and how to correct misbehavior. All of these different forms of retribution and social rebalancing, which were there in the Roman gods, which were actually the pantheon of the gods of the Greeks, which are actually the same as the organs in our body, so there's a logic to that system. But all of that was replaced by, okay, there's one God, and the Son is called the Son of God, and we're now going to use that. For those who know the history, it is evident that this is about the relationship between Horus and Isis, as it was already present in the Egyptian culture. So the Roman Church was nothing new. The Roman state was nothing new. The Greeks already had that. The Egyptians already had that. But what was in a way new was that in the Christian version of the manipulation of belief, the mass manipulation of belief, the manipulation of mass belief, the slave morality was much more pronounced. And as part of that, rules were brought in which had to do a lot to do with sexuality. As most people are aware, the church has a series of rites and rituals which are based on marriage, the marriage ritual, the birth ritual, and the death ritual. All of these rituals were already there in Egyptian times, but with a different perspective. And there they were also connected to the rituals of what in the church was called the seven sins, and the seven deadly sins, and seven hereditary sins, and the seven usual sins, let's call it that, which was the system of the seven chakras, which in that time was also the system of the gods. And essentially they were basically the regulation of how you would behave in society. And the seven chakras are the seven levels of consciousness in our body. Basically they start with the cellular awareness, the plant awareness, the animal awareness, the human awareness, then the social awareness, the communicational awareness, your own conscious awareness, and to top it all off, your universal awareness. So at each of these levels things can go wrong. So the seven sins basically describe that, yes, something can go wrong at those levels, because sinning is no more than a term of archery for missing the mark. So when you miss the mark, how can you correct that? And nowadays we would call that cybernetics. You correct a mistake and learn how to do it properly. But in the control system of the churches, that was not how it was presented. Basically, they just said, you're guilty and then you need to be punished. It is not about learning. And you still see that in the penitentiary system, the prison system, the juridical system, that people are called wrong, or people who feel wronged call for retributions, but there is no learning, there is no remedy, there is no healing taking place. And so when you see that this doesn't happen at all of the levels of these chakras, that they're just called the sins, and if you do something wrong, you have to pay money to the church, which is also where Protestantism came in and said, well, that's actually not helping a lot. That just brings money to build cathedrals in Rome, but it doesn't help the rest of humanity. But then they still worked with the same belief system and the same practices, essentially. And those practices were much about having humans being disconnected from humanity, because the priest had introduced the notion of God so that the ruler could be, let's say, responsibly irresponsible. That the ruler could be irresponsible, but that this construct of God would then give them the possibility to give a response to the people who accused them of wrongdoing. I need to paint this picture of the Roman legions with their robbing of the land of Europe, and to connect that to the Roman Church with essentially the robbing of the soul of Europe. Because once you understand that, then you can understand that the denial of sexuality is just one of the aspects of what they are doing. Amongst many other rituals and rites and methods of regulation and control and administration that they used. When you get to the control of sexuality, you actually get to the level of control of life and death, or more specifically about the life or the non-emergence of life. And when you connect that understanding of life and the non-emergence of life, or birth control, to the notion of the Roman land grabs and the Roman laws of property and ownership, and again, you need to connect that to the understanding that it is about the system of slavery, and that it was not just the ownership of objects extended to the ownership of the land on which the object rested, to extend to the ownership of the animals which lived on that land, to the extension of the humans who lived on the land. And then you can see that that notion of ownership is at the core of the Catholic Church, the Roman Church, and the role of the figurehead of the Pope, because the Pope has this crown with three levels, the tiara, and one claims ownership of earth. The second crown claims ownership of all that lives on the earth, or all that exists on the earth. And the third crown claims ownership over the soul of all living beings. And in that way, everybody is basically turned into a slave, and the Roman system is a system of slave administration. How many slaves do we have, how do they care for the animals, and how does that affect the land? Originally, there might have been a proper purpose about it, of preservation of the earth and having a balance of the animal, and having a proper perspective on the role of humans on that. But if we look back over a couple of millions of years, we can see that over millions of years there has been a natural balance in which everything worked out well, until humans decided that they should control everything. Basically the transition into the control belief of the churches. So in that control belief of the churches, the element of the sexual belief is right next to that of the control of life and death. If you look at the chakra system, then the bottom chakra is the is correlated to the cell and vitality, the ability to live on Earth. And the church at some point actually went into claiming control over that, in burning scientists who discovered that actually what the church was saying was not what you could see for yourself. So that the beliefs that this church presented was not actually related to the reality that we live in. So the burning of people, the judgment of life and death, was something which was part of their story too. The second chakra is that of the sexual chakra, or the combination of the inside and the outside, or the connection of the part and the whole, but also the connection between opposites, and specifically then in the human experience, the opposite of the male and the female. Once you see that as a male and a female you only have half of the story, then in sexuality you can see that with the complement of the story, of the other part of the story, you can transcend your own limited perspective and enter into a larger perspective. So the second chakra is about the ability to transcend the borders, and specifically to understand how through sexuality we can experience that. I'll come back to that in a bit. Let me first juxtapose the third and the fourth chakra. The third chakra is how you can transcend those boundaries in different contexts. So the second chakra is basically transcending the border or the boundary or the limitation as a plant would be able to grow out of the earth and the water below into the air and the light above. But at the level of the third chakra, it is more like that of an animal who can move from one territory to another and can recondition the circumstances that we are in. The fourth chakra, which is the solar plexus, is then where it all comes together as an entity with an identity. That you not only are able to know that you exist, that you know that you have boundaries which you can transcend, that you can actually move from one territory to the other, but you can actually select which territory would suit you best for the next phase of your development. So those first four chakras are then what we experience in the body, and the set of the fifth, sixth, seventh and eighth chakra are also describing the same, but then in relationship to our environment. The heart chakra is how we can breathe things in and breathe things out and share experience with our environment. The throat chakra is how we can regulate that flow of air and the sound and the communication that we do. We can tune into other and can attune to each other. In the forehead chakra, we have our own mind about how we can regulate that interaction with the environment that we share with all other living beings. And in the crown chakra, we can then see that that experience which we have is actually part of the universal experience. So in that system of eight chakras, the second chakra is crucial in that sense that it is where our vegetative being comes into play, where our ability to transcend our limitations comes into play, and where our ability lies in seeing how the seed relates to the plant, relates to the flower, and relates back to the seed, that there is a cycle of development. So once you realize that, then you can also understand that when the seed turns into flower, the seed turns inside out, then if you have a human discovering that they are actually part of the universe as a whole, then why would they continue to function as a slave? So it is at that level where you can see that in slave society, the development from seed to plant to flower to new seed is stopped. In the fourth system, you would describe that the transition from seed to stem to leaf to flower, with the continuation and implied in the sequence. But in our life we experience at the transition from baby to child to adolescent to adult. So as a child you're dependent, so others can control and determine your life. For slaves, that is one of the elements that they seek to achieve, that you're not able to be autonomous, that you're not able to be sovereign. So how do you do that? By imposing a limitation of your growth in a way that farmers would clip the wings of birds or castrate animals that they do not want to reproduce. In the same way, those techniques used by the farmer for the breeding control have been applied to humanity too. And the clipping of the wings or the castration of the animal is what we see in the regulation imposed on sexuality. So in a normal transition, you would see that people develop from baby to child to adolescent to adult. As a baby, they are dependent. As a child, they're sort of limited, capable to stand on their own, do their things. So they can do chores for others without having to be told all the time. As an adolescent, they would question the restrictions that are posed upon them and would seek to transcend beyond them. They would try to do things differently, others than have been determined. And of course, once they go beyond that, they can determine their own life. So in a slave society, what they sought to achieve is to make sure that people do not enter into that phase of puberty. They do not learn to discover that they can transcend their limitations and that they can complement each other, and out of that complementarity can discover that they have a full consciousness over their life, and that with each other they can create their own society. So in the Roman culture, just as in the Greek culture and the Egyptian culture, Babylonian culture before them, this principle of slavery implied that people were limited in what they could do and were allowed to do. And one of the core restrictions which was imposed on the people, also by the Roman Church, was the experience of sexuality. So the concept of sexuality, which if people look around, they can see that the flowers open up and cross-fertilized by the wind, or that the bees come out and pollinate the flowers. They can see that animals in the field will seek each other out and mate, and out of that young new animals will emerge. So it is evident, if you look around, that in nature everything shows how sex operates, and that sex operates, and that sex is essential for procreation and recreation, continuation of the forms of life. But in the setting of a slavery environment, that's what they sought to prevent, that people by themselves decide how they will mate and how they will propagate, and that instead the mating of people was regulated as the mating of animals. There's a whole background story of how the animal domestication came out of the hunters not capturing the animals, but locking them up and then determining their lives for them. So the church actually uses that metaphor when they call the priest the pastor, which is the shepherd, but then they are not very explicit about the shepherd not being a vegetarian. So they are into shepherding humans as if humans are animals, and they operate the same systems for control as they use for animals, but they present it as if they're doing it for the good of the animals, not showing that they're actually not vegetarians. And when you look at the techniques that have been used by the churches, and remember again that the church is just a psychological warfare aspect of government, which is a physical warfare department of the control of the people, the other people, the slaves, that we can still see that this whole notion of people being slaves being controlled by people who are, let's call it, free, still pervades society. Even though it is said that slavery has been abolished, as long as people do not create their own money and as long as people do not create their own laws, they are still de facto slaves. And the people who do create the money are the slave owners, because they determine the value of the cattle. And the people who do make the laws are actually the slave owners, because they determine the rules of the game. So if you want to be a ruler, you need to learn how to rule yourself. And the first place that you can learn to rule yourself is through getting to know yourself through sexuality. So for the churches, it was evident that in this approach of domestication of animals applied to the domestication of humans, the selective breeding would be part of that story. And so that required a series of mythologies, as to say, moral laws of or game rules, presented as if they're not game rules but just stories, by which people would go into a gullibility of the superstition of the belief and start to operate by those stories, because basically they never developed their mind any further. They assumed that what was repeated again and again, like a hypnotic command, would actually seem to be true. So a lot of what you see in the technology of mass control of the church is fundamental hypnosis and mass hypnosis, part of which has now entered into the advertising domain. Much of it has now been used in the domain of the media, the multimedia, and so that's the radio, the television, the Hollywood, but also the NSA as a means for thought control. So in that sense, it was possible for the church to have less of an important role, for the simple reason that the functions of that role have now been decentralized into other institutions with the same purpose and the same function. And so still, you can then see that sexuality is the pivot which is regulated by the social control systems. The church would have the book of administration of who marries with whom, and that was essentially, if you look back at the history of it, that whatever fruit came out of that union would be owned by the church. So a marriage, a wedding, is always, under Roman law, a merger of that what is owned by the people, and in this case, under Roman law, for slaves, they would not be owners of their own body, they would not be owners of their own mind, somebody else would be the controller of that. Think back of the Pope with the tiara, the crown at three levels, pretending to be owner at all of those levels. So the wedding is actually that the bodies of two people are now registered as a kind of joint account, and that everything that comes out of that joint account is still owned by the church, or if people have been married under the state, is owned by the state. And if you look at some of the older laws and some of the implied laws, you can see that. You can see more specifically when people divorce. They need only one signature to get married, but to get divorced, they need to dissolve their ownership, which is the financial dissolution. They need to dissolve the ownership of the children, which is the offspring or the harvest reattribution, and they need to dissolve their relationship, which is a relocation of ownership under separate registers. Just the same as you would see in joint bank accounts going back to unjoined bank accounts. So it sounds as if I'm not talking about sex and sexuality very much, because indeed the problem of sexuality is that sexuality and the experience of sexuality has been denied and repressed and regulated and controlled in so many ways, because it is not about the sexuality, it's all about the ownership and the control by other people than the people involved. So that the sexuality between the people has become subject and subordinate to a system of social control, social regulation, which is still based on the Roman Church, based on the Roman rule of ownership and slave ownership, ownership and administration of property. With that history of the Greeks doing that in Greece, and the Egyptians doing that in Egypt, the Babylonians doing that in Babylon, and so on. So once you get back to that story of the underlying system of slavery, which is still existing under all of that, then you can see that sexuality is indeed pivotal, because slavery is in fact a deformed or a warped, a perverted development from a baby to the child, to the adolescent, to the adult. In slavery, the, let's say, parent disallows the child to grow up to adulthood. You could see the same in the guild system in the Middle Ages, where an outsider could decide to join the guild, so a lay person could become an apprentice. Then the apprentice would have to chore and do the lowly jobs of the guild before being allowed to become a journeyman, which is basically that they could journey along with the master and look into how the work is done and do some of the chores related to the work itself. And then the master would determine how many of the journeymen would become a master by the master test, that they could actually demonstrate that they could do them themselves. In a normal guild system, in a healthy society, of course, you would like to have as many masters as you would possibly be able to create. But in a system where the guild system, remember that the guild system comes from the word guilder, which is from the word gilden, which is the word gold. At the moment that money comes into play, then that system will limit the amount of masters which is allowed to come through the system and come out of the system. In the same way that the medical doctors limit how many doctors there will be, because if there are many doctors, there will be a lot of healthcare for everybody, and healthcare will be cheap. And if it is limited, then healthcare will be expensive, because there is just a limited amount of doctors. So in that same way, the guild system will try to prevent that there are many masters, and in that same same approach, the slavery system will try to limit the amount of free people. So in order to limit the amount of free people, you need to then limit the development of other people, so that in the transition from baby to child to adolescent to adult, they actually do not make it to adult. They do not become sovereign, and they do not really become autonomous as an adolescent. Adolescence is specifically the transition where, through sexuality, you discover your complementarity between male and female, or rather between female and male, because female is the core of the survival of the human species. So if on one hand you can disempower the female by saying that the male is more important, that the head of the family is the male and not the female, then you've already achieved one kind of disempowerment. And when you can also say that the regulations for interaction, more specifically sexual interaction, need to be determined by the male, then you have subjugated the female yet more. And the control of sexuality, which used to be by the women and through the women, is then taken away from the women and taken over or given over to the male. But for the species, that is not the way it works, because essentially the female needs to choose which male you want to mate with, to copulate with, to fertilize with, so that a new conception can take place. So ideally, the women would select the best males that they could find. And out of that, the women would know how to improve the quality of the species. With the male domination, it's the strongest male which would control that. And so over the ages, and you can see that in the advertising industry, it is presented that the strongest male would grab the prettiest woman, and out of that you would sort of have a merger about mind and body somehow going to optimal intelligence. Well, if you would have that from the perspective of the female, you would have the healthiest male, the more flexible and more adaptive, not necessarily physically most strongest, and you would have the most fertile female, which would extend the continuity of the species. So the Roman rule on sexual repression was basically the control of sexuality, and thus the control of mating, and thus the control of offspring, and thus the control of, let's say, the herd of slaves that they were looking at. Because as the Pope would then claim to be owner of everybody, then the Pope would be the ultimate slave owner and determine by what rules more slaves would be produced. And so in that sense, the marriage contracts are agreements to register the union of two people, and not more than that, because otherwise the administration gets confused. An exclusivity on the union, because if the woman could decide to have another man parent a child with her, then the male would no longer be in control. And so in tribes you find that women who decide for themselves which partner they want to have for the creation of a child are stoned to death. It's not because there's something wrong with the women, actually the women are doing the right thing, but it's because the control system is suddenly thwarted or rebelled against. And that is the essence of the other part of the essence of the control of sexuality by the churches, that it is the relationship between one individual and the other leading to the creation of a family. But that means that if you have a family which has an internal connectedness separate from the environment around them, then as slave owners, how do you control that? So that's where all these limitations don't seem to have come in. And that in many ways the formation of families and the functioning of families have been subordinated to the rules of others. I'll come back to that in a moment.